Welcome to Indie Movie Cast, the podcast for indie movie makers by indie movie makers. I'm Alex, and I'm here with...
I'm Jay.
And...
Dominic.
And we have a special guest host this week. It's our good friend...
Joey.
Hi, Joey. Anyway,
how's it going?
Good.
How's it going?
Good, good, good. So, Joey is a indie filmmaker in Albuquerque.
Just like the rest of us.
Joey is a very talented director. He comes here from California, but he's been living here the past few years. He is a welcome member of Ultimatum Pictures when he chooses to be. he's worked on several of our movies as our cinematographer, among other things. He's great with cameras. And Joey, what do you want to say about yourself? What do you like about indie filmmaking?
Basically, I just I love stories. I love actually the more visual aspect of stories. I love sequences. Putting sequences together is probably the best thing that I would love to do, I guess.
Because if anything,
I have an editing background.
Yeah, you have an editing background. I was going to bring that up too.
Yeah, you're a great editor. You're computer savvy, and you're really into HD video. You subscribe to Cinematographer magazine.
This is true. And how do we all know this?
Well, Joey happens to be my roommate, so I see what magazine he subscribes to. But you're over in the California area. You're not here in beautiful Albuquerque on this snowy night.
Is it really snowing there? That's funny.
It's freezing too.
Is it freezing? Yeah, it's nice, and I think it was about 55 here.
Wow.
Jeez.
But it's very moist out here. Moist.
Ew, I hate that.
But that's
moist.
The way you like it.
You hate the word
moist. I love
moist.
It moist.
The night was moist. The night was sultry. Okay.
Exactly.
That's how you could begin your screenplay.
Well,
that's how you set up a scene.
That's from a movie. But all right, so let's get into our indie chat. As you may know if you've listened to other episodes, we are part of Ultimatum Pictures. You can find our movies at ultimatumpictures.com, but we're all indie movie makers in the Albuquerque area where indie filmmaking is huge. We've made several movies with Joey. I thought we'd tell you guys a little bit about what cameras we use and what cameras you should be using as an indie filmmaker. Since Joey's really into cameras because he gets Cinematographer magazine, I thought he could give us a lot
that
of
that makes him the leading authority.
Yes,
the leading authority,
of people we know who are into cameras. So
right.
So let's talk about the cameras. We use a specific camera, mostly because we get a good deal renting it. But it's a decent camera. It's a Panasonic HD camera. All the movies on the Ultimatum page have been filmed with the same camera. With various things attached to it, but which model is it, Joey?
It's a HVX 200, and basically it's the camera that you can use P2 cards with, which is a format that Panasonic came out with a few years ago.
And a P2 card is like a digital card, like in your digital camera. So we're not using tapes. It's going all digital as possible.
Yeah, I would say a couple of years ago they pretty much went the leap, obviously from SD to HD fully. If you remember a few years back, they had the DVX 100, which was a 24p camera.
Which is the camera I invested in.
Yeah,
sitting on a bookshelf now.
Yeah, it's actually
a lovely
saw it on the bottom shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the HVX is the latest version, I guess, of that type of camera, but still shoots 24p. Basically, besides, I guess, right now they have the red one out that you can rent.
Mm-hmm.
If you have maybe $1,000 a day to spend on it.
What do you mean by that? To buy it or to rent it? It's $1,000 a day?
To rent it. It costs about a full package for a red one.
Well, let's talk about the red. Let's talk about the red. If you're into indie filmmaking at all, I'm sure you've heard about the Red. The Red is a new brand of HD camera that just makes a beautiful picture, supposedly. A lot of big movies, a lot of big indie movies that get made use the Red camera. It's actually the camera in the little Indie Movie Cast logo I put a really fancy looking red camera on there just to look cool. But we don't own that camera or have any.
Or ever have even used it.
Yeah, or ever have even seen one. But what's so special about the red? I mean, what do you guys know about the red? Dominic, you were thinking of buying one, right?
No, it's actually from the same company, but it's called a Scarlett, which is a more consumer level of the red cameras.
So they are coming out with a consumer one. How much does that cost?
There's actually a few different models out there. I think actually Joey was just putting together a package for us to review, so Joey would probably have a better idea.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, basically, okay, just the camera body itself is going to cost around $2,500 or $2,600.
What?
I know. But it's actually pretty cheap considering it's using...
Wait, what was the price? $2,500?
Yeah, it's actually not bad. I mean, for the quality you get. I mean, that's probably...
Yeah, and the difference is the red one, which is out in circulation right now, which a lot of people use, including Soderbergh, and it shoots 4K. As of right now,
4,
projectors in movie theaters. I'm sorry.
4K stands for 4,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that mean 4,000 frames?
No. It's I guess the image size and image quality. I guess you get.
Well, it's like 1080i or 1080p.
Oh,
it's 1080
oh, no,
lines.
It's much more than that actually.
Exactly.
It's like
four times that much.
Well, it's 4,000 pixels, right? Versus
right.
1,080 pixels like your TV might have. The 4,000 pixels is for like a giant movie screen, right?
Exactly. Right. And you know, normal projectors right now in movie theaters, I read somewhere it was like it does about 2K resolution. So
yeah,
and 35 millimeter. Isn't it 2K? No.
No, it is. I used to work at a movie theater, some of the background of me, but digital projectors right now, the most reasonably priced ones are 2K. You can, I think Sony has either released or is about to release a 7K projector, but 7K, you're dealing with like IMAX size screen. It doesn't really matter if you're dealing with normal size movie
screens. Okay, so you're saying the top quality movie theaters in your area probably that use digital projectors are probably using a 2K projector.
Right.
So why get a red camera? What's the point of filming in 4K? What really are you going to see difference between that and like the Panasonic that we use on the big screen?
Well, there's a lot more more to work with. I guess the information that you get, the image size plus the information that you get, you could do a lot more visual effects stuff with it.
Exactly. I was just going to say, like working as an editor, you know, Joey and I are both kind of editors in that that regard, where sometimes you wish you had more information within that frame because you could expand it or compact it and manipulate it. And sometimes if you, you know, expand a frame, make it bigger, it just becomes, you know, unwatchable, unviewable because it's so pixelated. So when you have more information within that frame, you can manipulate it better, and it's better for green screen, et cetera, you know, you can get really fine with everything.
So what you're saying for our amateurs out there is the more pixels you have when you actually film it, the more you can mess with it at entity. Like you could even zoom in close into the frame, you know, go different places in it, and the quality would still remain in most cases.
Yeah, I mean, that's still, yes, absolutely. You could zoom in a little bit and kind of tweak.
Well, let's talk a little bit about film, because this HD stuff, this high quality pixels, all this stuff is new. I mean, the world has gone on, the movies have been made on film forever before that, and film just gives a gorgeous picture anyway. And but why should we go? I mean, what did he say renting the red was? Thousands per day?
Yeah, basically a whole entire package, including.
Well, what is that versus? What is that versus getting an actual film camera and making a film? Just like, you know. Like,
right. Here's the thing with film cameras. You have to buy the stock that comes with film. You have to not only buy the stock, but you have to process it after. You got to get a telecine, then you have to edit it, then send out the information back out. it's a
and
whole
Telecine is basically digitizing each frame so that way it's put into the camera.
Right. So when you shoot on film, you edit digitally anyway. You turn it to a digital thing and you edit it in your computer. No one edits on film anymore.
Right. Unless you have a flatbed and you're editing on, on a flatbed, organically, you're actually doing it. Everyone's using a.
Well, who uses a flatbed? Anybody? Orson Welles? I mean, who uses a flatbed?
No one.
Yeah. Also, too, with film, when you work with film, I mean, you could ask any person who does, is you have to set up your shots and be very picky about what you shoot. Whereas when you go into the digital world, you know, you can shoot all day. It doesn't matter, you know, if you don't like it.
Yeah, so it's hard to
delete it or whatever. So, yeah, it's like you definitely have a lot more flexibility with digital.
Absolutely.
Whereas with film, you have to be very particular and very, like, you have to go in there with a game plan because you don't want to waste this film stock that you're using.
Yeah, and we just waste our time all day, right?
Pretty much.
No, basically, yeah,
hey,
you could shoot all day, every day.
Shoot, why not?
Hey, Joey, I had a question for you as far as, like, digital cameras and everything like that. And, you brought up lenses at one time. I think briefly you skimmed over it. But I noticed that when you use the Panasonic HVX200, you get this adapter for it called an M2 adapter where you could put pretty much prime lenses on it. And so I was wondering, like, you know, when you get, like, when you use a RED camera, can you ignore the M2 adapter because you can
The RED camera.
Like, what is the M2 adapter specifically for, and why would one even need it or use it?
Right. The
M2 you're referring to attaching other lenses to these HD cameras.
Correct. Yeah, and that's something that kind of came out right before the availability of the RED one. It's 35mm lens adapters for HD cameras or any camera actually. Basically, you shoot through an M2 adapter, which is like a box that has kind of a spinning glass. Anyway, it allows you to have depth of field when you attach lenses to it. Basically,
who use it? Cause
basically that rig or this M2 adapter basically is something to put onto your camera that is not capable of interchangeable lenses, right?
Right. Right.
Like, I guess the
Absolutely.
HVX200, you can't interchange, your own
right.
lenses
it's,
with
it's,
it, so you need this adapter to be able to do that, right?
Yeah, it's a fixed lens that they have on the HVX. And this allows you to have more versatility.
So are you saying the RED has this built in, so we don't need this adapter?
Oh, no. The RED, actually, the camera body that you purchase, it's made like a film camera. You would have to attach separate lenses to the actual camera body.
Okay, so for our listeners, what we're basically saying is if you want fancy shots like depth of field, and you don't want to cheat to get it, then to get this on the camera that you may own or a camera that you may rent or something, you can attach this N2 adapter and to attach these lenses. The RED, one of the advantages of the RED is you don't need to. It's just attached to the camera.
And one of the big advantages of that is that you lose so many stops when you...
Yeah.
You're what, the N2 adapter? You lose stuff?
Yeah,
the M2 adapter, basically, when you're the more stuff that you put in front of the actual sensor or lens, you lose light. Basically, you have to light more. Shooting a feature on HVX with an M2 adapter, you need a lot more light than you would need if you were shooting it with, say, the RED camera. For one, the RED camera has maybe 4 or 5 times the size of the sensor that the HVX has. Not only that, but it's
bad.
Yeah, it would make sense to shoot a feature with that.
So is it safe to say to the cheapest way to make a high quality looking movie, a professional looking movie, is getting a hold of one of these RED One cameras?
Absolutely.
And that's cheaper than film, and that's cheaper, and that's the best quality HD there is.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, I have another question for you. So these HD cameras are going way consumer. You can get a little flip camera for $100 that shoots in 1080p. You know, what is the? I mean, if it's HD, is it HD? I mean, are we only getting these fancy cameras for the lenses? I mean, what? I mean, can you? What do you know about those little cameras? Anything?
Little cameras. I wouldn't. I mean, if you're talking about the flip that you just record.
Yeah, the HD flips.
The HD flips, even the HD flips. The sensors, you're talking about the sensors and how they manipulate, I guess, the image digitally. The quality of the sensor itself is not going to be nearly as good as, say, the RED at all.
What does the sensor do exactly? What are you talking about?
You know, like, I guess...
No, he's rubbing his nose right now. You guys can't tell.
Yeah, I'm rubbing...
Well, basically,
he has a nervous thing where he rubs his face with his...
The sensor picks up the light, essentially. So
exactly.
And also, like, the color spectrum, too. Like, I've noticed in those little flips and stuff like that, everything looks washed out, very, you know, it doesn't look as crystal clear. It's very grainy still, even though it's in 1080i or whatever. They're extremely grainy. They're extremely washed out.
Just because there's a lot of pixels and it's a big-ass, resolution, that doesn't mean that it's actually quality at all.
Yeah, right. Basically, it's almost like shooting, if you remember maybe 15 years ago, shooting a VHS tape versus, I guess, a Betacam tape, what they used for the news back in the day.
You know, as I knew, Beta was better than VHS.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And Betacam, you know, and DVCam even.
Oh, I'm so glad those days are behind us. Screw screw magnets and tape. What a lousy practical way to make stuff. Give me digital. Give me ones and zeros. make that picture gorgeous.
But one of the big things that I've noticed with the short films that I have helped make that are in RED cameras, or even feature movies that I've worked on that shoot with RED, is they're kind of finicky, because I mean it's still a digital technology that is being
perfected.
On. Yeah, being perfected, and there's a lot of stuff that it just can't take.
So you're saying wait a few more years? I mean, is this consumer RED any good? Is it the same as these Panasonic? I mean, you're talking about sensors and stuff. I mean, what makes the consumer?
Well, we don't know yet. We don't know yet, because it's they haven't released the Scarlett.
Because the RED is a brand name. It's like Kleenex now. Everyone's just like, oh, RED, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I figure anybody who's using this kind of technology, you know, I'm sure they're smart enough to figure it out. And hopefully, right? Because
like who?
Absolutely. I mean, anybody
who takes on, okay, I want to use a RED camera. I mean, there are like film groups or film teams or whoever out there who think they need the biggest and baddest
and they're rich or something.
They're rich and their movies come out like crap or whatever.
Hey.
I mean, that happens.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't even know who you're talking about.
No, I'm not talking about anybody. I'm just saying it happens. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, if we were to take on that technology, I think we're smart enough to figure it out. And if we're not smart enough, then we have no business using it.
You hear that, dumb silver spoon indie movie makers? Get smarter before you spend your money.
I don't know.
Kidding. All right, Joey, what were you going to say?
I was going to say a great resource if you're ever shooting RED, and, you know, there's a huge community of RED users out there. There's a website called redduser.net, and it's kind of in lieu of, the DVX and the HVX community has their own. They have a dvuser.net as well, or .com, and basically, everything that you need to know, or if you have questions, if you're a newbie to the RED or the HVX camera, you just go on the forums and look up what they have to offer. And they have experts that pretty much let you know what how the camera works and you know, like, I guess, the workflow.
This website you're talking about, you've been there. I mean, I mean, this makes people like you who've never even used one more familiar with concept of it, or
absolutely. And the workflow with RED, basically, it's still 4K is a lot to handle. They still have to edit offline basically take down the resolution and you know, match it up later and connect them back together later, because 4K, when you're shooting 4K, like editing it in real time is pretty much impossible right now.
The computer can't handle that much information, right?
Steve Jobs, get with it, man.
I know.
But what's interesting is like when you record on a RED camera, it makes like three or four different files. One's a 4K, and then another one's like a 2K, and another one, and you edit with one of the lower resolution ones, so that way you can actually edit
match
in real
it up
time.
With a bigger thing.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
That sounds ultimately frustrating, but sounds cool at the same time. I love where technology is going, but it seems like it's not quite there yet, where it's like almost perfect, like your to use film. I mean, it seems like if you're a filmmaker and you have access to film, that's the more surefire way to go. Still.
Absolutely.
Well, if you know how to work with
it. You got to know how to do it.
Oh, well, you hire the unions for that.
Yeah. There's still a process.
But it's definitely like filming on film is its own art. I mean, because you're basically doing it blindfolded. You know, you shoot it and you hope it comes out right when you process it. And then
but these days they have a video feed coming from it.
But that's only recording what the film is.
But the digital part is recording, right?
But it's coming into the lens, but you don't know
is getting on the film.
Yeah, it's getting on the film.
They've been filming with film for like 100 years now, practically. And basically, I mean, they have ways to manipulate the look. You know, the DP will sit there with the colorist and go over pretty much everything that, you know, if he wants a bleach bypass look where everything is kind of blue and pale blue, versus, you know, a very warm look. And it's all done chemically. And it's actually can be really beautiful if you think about how organic it really is. But I'm still all for the digital revolution and actually prefer digital over film.
You're
for one,
a fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's – I think the older generation of filmmakers that are making films right now don't really quite grasp, I guess, with the digital movement.
Well, you've obviously never heard of James Cameron.
Yeah, well, no. Besides James Cameron, but you know, a lot of people are.
No, I hear what you're saying. There's still some troglodytes out there in the Stone Age. Yeah,
but that's okay. You know, I mean, Spielberg has even said, you know, I never want to shoot, you know, on digital. I prefer to shoot on 35mm, and hopefully I will do that to the day I die. But he also says that, you know, the company he owns and everything he's doing, he understands that, you know, other filmmakers that he hires into his company probably want to shoot digitally, and he says that's okay. You know, I understand that progress, but for me, for myself, you know, it's film. But
you know, digitally,
it's all what you
want
to do. I mean, if they pick your format and go for it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, digital way is better for indie filmmakers. It's just cheaper.
Oh, for sure.
Oh yeah, it's definitely and as you can see from our movies, ultimatedpictures.com, that you get a pretty good looking movie even from these more consumer level HD cameras. But real quickly, speaking of that, I'd like to talk to Joey a little bit about the Doorpost Festival. If you've been listening, you know we are planning on doing a Doorpost entry. That's yet to be even conceived, but we are still planning
on it. We're working on it.
Yeah, but we've been talking about this competition. It's a competition where you enter a movie in. If it makes it past the first round, they give you they give you a lot of money to make a 20-minute movie, and if that gets up there, then they give you a lot of money. So, Joey, you did this competition last year. What should we expect?
Basically, they pick 100 out of all the thousands that submit.
And you made that.
Judges pick it, right?
Judges definitely pick it, and from there.
The first round.
And you made that cut last year, right, Joey?
Yes.
The movie you did called Do Not Disturb, which will.
Yeah, Do Not Disturb actually made the cut, and basically after it makes the cut, it goes through a voting process where viewers vote, and you have to watch five movies at a time in order to vote.
Yeah, that's annoying, huh?
That just makes it fair, though.
You can't just watch your friends. You have to watch five people you don't know.
But that's what makes it fair.
Cool. Well, you're not doing it this year then, Joey, are you?
No.
Yeah, you're going to help us with ours?
What's up? Yeah. What depends on when you guys are shooting it too.
Or shooting on a weekend in January. We'll see. All right, guys. Well, that's it for this first segment. We're going to come back with Schmollywood. See you all then. Okay, Schmollywood time. This is where we tell you everything that's going on in Hollywood Schmollywood, which is nothing.
It is the Christmas break, so.
Yeah, you know, we tried to come up with some nice, juicy news and gossip for you. We couldn't find much. No one died this week, man.
Nope.
Man, I was thinking, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar or someone was going to go.
Wishful thinking.
No, I like her, actually. I want to make a movie with her.
Let's do it. Rock and roll.
But it is the end of the year, and it's the end. This is our last show we're gonna do for 2009. Next week we'll give you our list of our top movies of the year and a decade, which is everyone's doing this week. We probably should have done it this week, right, Jay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, but we'll do it next week. We promise you. But this week there are a couple other lists that I think is interesting, particularly the box office. As I said previously in another show, that I don't really think box office is important. I think people worry about it way too much because people tend to think if a movie makes money, it's a movie these days, which is especially if it makes a movie on the first weekend, which is a little wacky. But let me go over the top 10 movies with you guys. Okay, you ready?
Ooh, these are top 10 movies.
Top 10 money makers of 2009.
Top 10 money makers. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Number 10 is The Blind Side. Made a lot of money, $186 million.
Can I see that?
No, it's out right now. It's with Sandra Bullock. And it.
Oh, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Nobody expected that.
Yeah, but okay. So that's a little weird. Number 9 is Ice Age.
$196
million. Number 8 is Monsters vs. Aliens, $198 million.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so two kids movies that I haven't seen, to be honest, are a lot of movies. I think, you know, I think that just says something about movie theaters being babysitters. Number 7 is Avatar, $232 million. Okay. Number 6 is Star Trek with $257
million. Nice.
I thought that would be higher on the list.
Me too.
But here are the top 5 movies, and I was surprised, all right? Number 5 is The Hangover.
Yeah.
$277 million.
That's like the highest money-making comedy, too, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting these results from boxofficemojo.com. That gives you all the info about it. They always update the list of the top movies of all time. But so Hangover made a lot. Number 4 is Twilight New Moon, which, of course, a little bit obvious. Number 3 is Up, which is Pixar's big movie. So all these animated movies are in the top 10 list. Pretty interesting. Number 2 is Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince with $301 million.
Another kids movie, kind of like, you know?
Yeah, but that has a huge fan base. And the number 1 movie of 2009 box office. Any guesses?
I have no idea.
It's
probably Watchmen.
No, I wish. It's Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen.
I should have said that.
Number 1 movie of the year, $402 million.
Nice.
Yeah, Notable Things Missing, 2012 is number 14. G.I. Joe, number 16. Terminator 4, number 21. Inglourious Basterds, number 23. District 9, 25. Paranormal Activity, 27. Watchmen, 28. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, there you go. I would think that Watchmen would be higher on the list. That's interesting.
Well, Watchmen was what came out around March. And no, it came out earlier than that. It was like January,
really?
And February, which was like
It came out really early.
Yeah, and which is like a dead time for movies. So
right.
It made a lot for that time of year, I think. But yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think about that? I would say Transformers is probably one of the worst movies of the year.
if you cater to kids and women or both at the same time, you're gonna get huge money makers. I think Hangover and Star Trek were the only two in the top 10 that men would actually go and watch.
Well, I'd say Avatar too, but yeah, I see what
you're
saying.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't even. Yeah, and Avatar.
Yeah, but you're right. These are mostly kids' movies. I mean, one could argue most of those Transformers tickets were for kids.
Well, you
kids
know,
slash tweens.
That's the thing with movies is that, I mean, that's why you never go by box office numbers because, I mean, it just shows most movies, if they want to make money, are going to be kids' movies.
Well,
and that's why a lot of times when they're making a movie that's supposed to be rated R, Terminator, Salvation, they put it as a PG-13.
Supposed to be rated
that
R.
Way they get all those people in there. You know,
well, it didn't work for them. But,
it didn't work for them.
But Hangover is proof that an R-rated movie can make money. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah, it definitely can. It's just more likely that get money out of their kids.
It's so, better to be safe than sorry.
So this
exactly.
list is just plenty of reason why there's so many fart jokes in movies. I mean, kids are in the theaters. They're the ones filling up the seats. Anyone else?
Yep.
Yep. So,
and as you notice, a lot of those movies on this this year, like what, half of those were cartoons and most of them were in 3D. Well,
yeah, so they make an extra $3 off those tickets too.
Exactly.
Oh, what a scam Schmollywood is, huh? That's why people stay indie. Don't. I'd be really sad if any of the listeners of this show grew up to be famous 3D monster versus alien movie makers.
I might be.
No. Dang. I'll sell out.
You
can make those movies. I don't care. Make Ice Age.
If Alex was offered $300 million, he would make a movie.
Dude, I'd make the coolest animated movie for kids ever. It would be called Fart Joke, the movie. So, another list I found interesting was Yahoo's top 10 most viewed trailers of 2009. And the reason I think this is interesting, because it's kind of an indication of what the most hyped movies of the year were. And does that make sense?
That
yeah,
sometimes
and
did and sometimes did not pan out.
Yeah.
Most
yeah.
of those movies ended up being in the top 10 of moneymakers.
We'll see after we read the list. Okay, so number 10 trailer was Up. You guys downloaded that trailer?
Oh, I watched it. I did.
What a question. Who knows? Yeah, we probably did. Number 9 was Avatar. Pretty hyped. Number 8 is Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. Now, the reason why this trailer got...
It's so wacky, man.
this trailer features a guy in a plane and a shark jumping from the ocean and eating him inside a plane. So I think this just got like a Snakes on the Plane internet play type thing, you know? Okay, number 7 was Star Trek. Number 6, G.I. Joe. Number 5, Harry Potter. 4, Terminator Salvation. So that movie was really hyped. A lot of people wanted to see the trailer, and then they didn't go see the movie. Maybe that was a bad trailer. Maybe you guys were right in that episode where you guys were talking about how they spoiled things in the trailer, even though they didn't.
Spoiled things in the trailer.
Okay. Number 3 was 2012. That's interesting, I think. That movie.
That is, too.
Because that movie, when that was coming out, it seemed like nobody wanted to see that.
Exactly, right? Like
that's one of those things where like the trailer was just cool to watch because you see things blowing apart and stuff. But you're like, I've already seen that. I don't know.
I rolled my eyes at it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I guess everyone was like, oh, we got to check out this 2012 trailer because I think 2012 itself is getting a lot of hype. I think it's getting a lot of people are buying into this thing where the world's gonna end in 2012 because Mayans,
right?
Not have even thought so.
Would you say that was on the list of the other thing? It was up there.
It was
the teens or the 20s?
It was like number 12. It was 14. 2012 was the 14th. So, but yeah, that's interesting. Number 2 was Transformers, you can see that movie was hyped up a lot, but man, it sucked. Number 1, trailer downloaded. Any guesses?
Oh, I know.
I already know what it is. But.
Oh, yeah. It's Twilight, which...
Yeah, that is insane. That's like, yeah. I avoided that trailer like the plague, but that just goes to show that...
Well...
That's just me. Obviously, I do
teenage
not...
Teenage girls are looking at the trailer.
And teenage
every tween in the world was watching that.
And I don't know if you guys know this, but teenage girls spend a lot of time online. Like,
yeah.
I'd say more than teenage boys. Like, I think for every minute a teenage boy plays a video game, a teenage girl is online talking about Twilight or Harry Potter. Because, you know, as a Harry Potter fan, I mean, I'm a Harry Potter fan, but, you know, I'm a little bit old for that. You know, I'm just kind of a nerd, you know, but I do go to the Harry Potter fan sites and things like that, and it's just full of 11-year-old girls, and it's just like, these little girls are just all over the internet when it comes to this stuff. They're,
well,
when they're fangirls, they're obsessed with it. I would say Twilight's probably a top Google search, too, and so is Harry
Potter. I'll tell you what, on Facebook, I have some friends that I would never have expected, you know, who were just talking about Twilight and a couple other things, like, constantly.
Are they single girls?
Excited about it. No, just people my age, our age.
I know, but are they single girls?
No.
Okay.
Are they women?
Yes. We know some of them. I'll tell you, I don't want to bring their names up on the show, but like, I was just surprised on Facebook at how many people were talking about it.
How many grown women friends of yours? Well, there was something online where it showed a bunch of about 40-year-old women, not that we're 40, but 40-year-old women with this, screaming for Twilight, and they had a sign that said Twilight Moms.
Yeah.
And there was a caption underneath that said, if these were a bunch of 40-year-old men screaming for a teenage girl, you call the police.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, so. All right, so not much going on in Schmollywood. If there is, then it's not making headlines, at least. So, trailer reactions, some interesting trailers. Hot Tub Time Machine, which
yeah.
I saw earlier today when I went to the movie. I just want to bring this up because I think it looks hilarious.
Is that going to be R-rated?
I think it is. I hope so. But I like a little bit of raunch in my comedies. But the reason, I mean, this movie is about look it up if you haven't seen the trailer. But it's about some people who end up in the 80s. You know, and one of the
by hot tub.
Yeah, one of them was John Cusack. Am I wrong?
No.
Yep,
John Cusack.
One of the
actors from The Office who works in, like, the warehouse.
Yeah, the kid from Sex Drive and someone else. Yeah, I just think John Cusack, is just because he was such an 80s movie star,
mm-hmm.
I think that this is kind of funny that when they go back to the 80s when we're obsessed with John Cusack. Anyway, I what do you guys think of that trailer? I think
I'm stoked for it. I had seen the trailer for that months back actually, and I thought I still was like way into it, so I kind of forgot about it. So it was nice to get a refresh because I'm looking forward to it. And I love the title because it says it all right there. I mean, you go in, there's
yeah.
knowing exactly what you're getting yourself into. It's brilliant.
Well, yeah, as far as the title, I love how it's just called Hot Tub Time Machine. Like, it's something so stupid that it doesn't even matter. It's like, okay, time travel is kind of dumb, you know, so we found a kind of a dumb way to do it, and you know, who cares?
Yeah,
it's the movie's more about making fun of the age. But Joey, what do you think?
The trailer sucked.
Really?
I mean, it's funny. It's going to be raunchy. I think Chevy Chase plays, the guy who installs the hot tub.
He kind of reminds me of the Don Knotts character in Pleasantville.
Yeah, me too, exactly. What sucked about it for you? Because I'm all excited about it, obviously.
Really?
Yeah, what did
you know, I guess it's just a matter of taste. I'm not as into...
well, man.
I'm just not into those types of comedies as much anymore, you know?
Well, he's grown up, Alec. He's a little
No,
loose.
No, it's not that. I just think it's... You know,
no,
the concept, it just seems like they pulled it out of a hat. Basically, here's a hat, I'm going to pull out, you know, a time travel. I'm going to pull out, what is the device for time travel? A hot tub. And it's
yeah,
like, let's
it's
pull
a
out
48-hour.
Yeah, it, pretty much. And it's like, oh, okay, let's make a hot tub time machine movie that sends us back to a decade. Let's see what decade that might be. They pull out of the hat, the 80s. Let's just go see.
So you're saying, you know, this is the manatee system that South Park thinks the way Family Guys were in, the manatees just come up with keywords and you put it together?
Yeah,
hot tub, time machine, 80s. Movie!
Exactly.
Dominic, what do you think? Are you excited for this?
It made me chuckle. I'm curious to see where it goes. I want to see it. You know?
Okay, well, I dare to say that this is 2010's Hangover.
It could potentially be it. Well, it's either that movie or the Rebel movie. What is that called? Oh, with Michael Cera.
Oh yeah, that looks funny too. Okay, well, moving on. Inception. Inception is the big DiCaprio special effects CGI extravaganza, and I have to say, blew me away a little today when I saw it in the theater. here. What about you guys?
I thought it was
really. It
made
me cream a little bit, actually.
Whoa!
Okay. We went to
it's like reading a filmmaker magazine for sure.
Explain, Joey. Explain.
Yeah.
Actually, I was having coffee at the time, and I was
that kind of
putting some sugar and cream in my coffee.
Okay.
No, actually, it looked really, really interesting, and I guess it's I read the plot on IMDb, and it's supposed to be about a corporation that can tap into people's dreams, and I guess Leo plays a CEO, and I guess he goes in there himself. I don't know.
Well, yeah, Dominic, Jay, what do you think?
I like that this trailer didn't give too much away. It's like the second trailer, so that means the teaser's already been out there. And that they still haven't given away too much about the plot or what you see. And I love when trailers do that. They should just be enough to entice you to come
tease
watch
you.
It, not tell you the whole show.
You like being teased. Dominic's a teaser.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is teaser number two. I guarantee there will be a trailer for this.
Oh, I'm sure there will.
This is not the trailer for a movie. It's just,
yeah, but I'm definitely excited about it.
But I am excited about it. I saw the first teaser for it. And that's really cool because there's, like, people fighting, jumping across the walls a la Matrix-like, but probably cooler because this is Christopher Nolan directing it now.
Mm-hmm. And Christopher Nolan, the Batman guy.
Yeah, and I'm kind of a big Nolan fan. I mean, I don't like his movies all the time, but at the same
but he's
time,
good,
I appreciate, like, oh, man, if I could ever be a director, I want to be, like, that guy. But I think, I don't know, I was just...
Well, as far as what you were saying, Joe, about the dream stuff, I mean, when you compare this to the Lovely Bones trailer, I just think this dream world looks a lot cooler than the Lovely Bones dream world. I know they're two totally different stories, but I'm just saying, as far as blow me away-age, this one.
Absolutely. Especially
and this
honestly,
didn't even show that much. Which is a,
yeah,
which
it didn't show much, and it was like a city folding over on itself. And stuff.
Yeah,
and I'm not
yeah.
the biggest fan of CGI, especially when it's obvious, but when it gets creative like this, like I get kind of giddy. It's like, ooh, something I've never imagined right in front of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to appreciate that. I think it's going to be good, you know.
Yeah, me too.
There you go.
Okay, so with a couple of good movies coming out, except Joey's not too excited for the hot tub one, but he has a higher taste.
Well, no, hold on. This is coming from the guy who. Hold on. This is coming from the guy who went to go see that Twilight movie with his girlfriend. So don't take my word too much for it. So.
He only likes movies that she says he should like.
I value your opinion very much. which gets us into the next segment of our show, the movie review. So Think How I Think coming up. Think How I Think.
How You Think?
Oh, here we go again. Okay, Think How I Think. It's the movie review time. Okay, so the four of us went and saw Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Squeakquel. Okay, guys, what do you think?
Amazing.
Oh,
I love the love story.
It looked amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. And the CGI this time around?
Oh, my God. They look like real chipmunks the whole time.
Yeah, they look like real chipmunks in this one. I was blown away.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding, guys. We didn't see Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, you tricked me.
Oh, we tricked everyone. Okay. We're really in real lives recording or reviewing Sherlock Holmes, the Guy Ritchie, Robert Downey Jr., Arthur Conan Doyle, Jude Law, Rachel McAdams. Other
actors.
Okay, so anyway, those are people involved with the movie, but you know who Sherlock Holmes is. He, as Stewie said, this is Sherlock Holmes with more explosions and fighting, right? So let me just tell you guys what I thought real quick. I thought that this movie was pretty awesome. I enjoyed myself for most of it. I thought that it was exciting. Romp into this world. I think Robert Downey Jr. is just hilarious. And those are my initial thoughts. Jay?
I also enjoyed the movie. I had a good time. I thought Robert Downey Jr. was awesome. Great character. He devised a whole, character for what he was playing. And Jude Law was equally as awesome.
Jude Law was pretty awesome too. Yeah, good casting, I'd say.
It was very good casting
for this one. Yeah, Dominic.
And, hold on. My only thing is I felt like there could have been a little bit more action in it.
More action. You wanted more action in this movie?
I wanted a little bit more. It felt like the parts in between the action sequences where it got a little too long, maybe at parts. But you know.
Well, I don't know about that. I think maybe you're craving better action, because I thought the action, I think there was quite a bit actually, but I thought some of it was were the most boring parts of the movie. I don't know. It's not good.
I see. You're just wanting more Michael Bay action, is what you're wanting.
No. Oh, come on. It could have used a little bit more here and there.
Well, Dominic, what do you think? More action?
You know, I initially I didn't know how I would like this movie, because I mean, it's Sherlock Holmes, and they're gonna make it action on it. But it was actually pretty good. I think all the characters were fun, and it was funny, and the action for me was fine. I mean, it gets too many movies just to want to be about the action scenes, and they're not about the characters. But this was mostly about the characters. They cared about them, so I really had fun with it. So I liked the movie.
You have fun, Joey?
Absolutely. I thought it was fantastic.
Thought it was a hoot.
There's nothing that could be cut out. I think it was 2 hours and 14 minutes, and it seemed like an hour and a half long movie to me.
Yeah, it went by kind of quick for me too. And from what about the action scenes? Because I mean, this is what the trailer is like playing out. It looks like maybe that's why you're expecting a little more, Jay. Because
no, I just wanted it. I wanted it.
but the action scenes, you know, it was a little. I mean, because the purists who are into Sherlock Holmes, if there are any, I mean, people really into Sherlock Holmes that much these days. But I mean, I've heard some people complaining, or I've read online about, you know, that they turned Sherlock Holmes into an action star. But the way they did it in the movie, I thought, was logical in the spirit of Sherlock Holmes. Because,
yeah, it was clever. It was fairly clever.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I've read a couple Sherlock Holmes novels, and I'm very familiar with Star Trek: The Next Generation. So, you know, I have a little bit of background with Sherlock Holmes. And the thing about him is his deducting. He can see at something, he can see something, and he can just tell you everything about it. Every you know, he sees a scuff on your pants, he knows you were getting trampled by elephants last week. I mean, he's just really keen on that. And the way they made him into a fighter played on that. Like, he looks at a guy and he sees his weakness.
Yeah, he's able to adjust for their moves and kind of foresee how to beat them physically in the same regard that he's able to deduce, you know, common things.
Yeah, so he doesn't have superpowers or anything like in some of these action movies. He's just really smart, and he knows – and he can see that if you have a cut on your ear, that getting slapped in your ear will mess you up, you know. And then if you looks like you're a drinker, getting punched in the liver will take you down. So he plans these out, and that's how he takes these foes down. And I thought that was pretty genius, actually, personally.
Wasn't it the opening scene was a fight, and he was deducting right away, and it was just really cool to see that. You're like, wow.
Yeah. So I bought into that right away. I was like, okay, this could be an action movie. And what I say to the purists out there is, this is what I kind of wish like A Christmas Carol was. I mean, I've seen A Christmas Carol a billion times in a thousand different ways. They're just gonna do another shot-for-shot retelling. It's like, action it up, make it cool, make it fun, you know, make it modern. And I think they've done this successfully and unsuccessfully in the past. What comes to mind is the Zorro movies have, you know, already been redone. You know, with Antonio Banderas, and this was kind of reminiscent on that.
Well, I'll tell you what I really liked about this movie as well, if like anything. I really liked the dialogue and the interactions.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the dialogue was very appropriate and keen to the time.
Yeah, and
it worked, and it was still like funny. Everything was funny. It was like a buddy movie, but back then.
Yeah, exactly. And take a note, James Cameron, because. I mean, yeah, the dialogue was great, and the characters were great. I mean, I mean, there's a scene where there's this big perilous Indiana Jones thing with a saw, and they gotta unhook her before she gets sawed in half. And you know, I couldn't even tell what that machine did or what it or what the purpose of this whole. I mean, it was to cut pigs in half, but you know, you didn't really even see it all. Like it was shot kind of cheaply, but it was still so suspenseful. Because you like the characters, and that's what makes a good movie, an action movie or not.
I like, absolutely, and I agree with everything that's been said. The only problem I personally had with it was casting Rachel McAdams, and also actually, no, that's pretty much the only problem.
That brings up a good thing.
Because
I was wondering, what is she from, America or what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she didn't really get the, you know, the accent or anything. And I think that, you know, other people might have been able to play it better. And I,
Robert Downey Jr. has a perfect accent. Well, I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Done,
and
he's
a master of his craft.
I could agree. Rachel McAdams was probably a low point on this movie.
Yeah, and I throw Scarlett Johansson or Jennifer Gardner or Natalie Portman or even Evangeline Lilly, you know?
You're just saying girls who you think is hot.
Yeah.
I actually would rather see Rachel McAdams in this movie like she was than any of those ones.
Well, really? You know, or God forbid hiring a British actress.
I'm so glad they didn't go Keira Knightley.
Yeah, really.
That would have
another
made me
period
mad.
Piece of Keira Knightley. We need that.
Yeah.
But another thing I didn't like about it was the CGI. I mean, I don't know, man. It's the green screen just is obvious to me, and it takes me out of it. Like at the end of the movie, I don't want to spoil anything, but at the end of the movie, they're up on this big high area. And they're so obviously in front of green screens, and she's about to fall off, and it's supposed to be perilous. But if they shot it at the edge of a building, it would look more real to me than green screen this up. And there was a sequence with a boat where just CGI chains are flying all over the place, and it just all looked really terrible to me. What do you guys think?
Half and half. Some of the CGI, it was like, wow, that's pretty good CGI, you know.
Well,
like,
some of it was. I mean, I guess I don't know, but I'm talking mostly in the action sequences.
Yeah, you can tell it's CGI or screen.
Particularly when there's green screen, and I just don't know if green screen looks right. I mean, I think it has a lot to do with the people lighting the actors and the people making the backgrounds don't even know each other and don't work with each other in these movie situations. Just
I don't know. I think it was just cheaply done too. I didn't see really, like, the depth of field wasn't there. I mean, who did this? Was it ILM or?
Well, I don't know. But you know, I've worked on a movie with a lot of green screen, and I noticed that they lit it weird when I was on an actual green screen stage. And then the movie didn't look that good either. It was a movie called Dark Country that you can rent, but the green screen looks terrible in that movie. And I think, and I dare to say, it looks terrible in King Kong and big green screen movies. I think it's just obvious, and filmmakers rely on it too much these days.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said this on a previous podcast. I think that filmmakers use it because one, it's easier than actually going out, which is just being lazy, and two, they think it to the viewers that they don't know the difference when they actually do, and it does impact.
You know, and green screen does look better than it did in 1985, but
still, it's not at the point where you can pass it off as being reality.
Well, I mean, it can look as real as it can. I mean, it's not that it doesn't look real; it's that I can tell it's green screen, and it's usually in their hair and when they make swift movements. But
I think sometimes for me, where I can tell is it's camera movements, like the actor isn't moving at the same kind of it doesn't look right.
I mean,
because
the background,
the actor and the background
movement.
Are moving differently, right. And you could kind of tell because we're so used to human beings like driving in a car that when we look out and we see somebody walking on the sidewalk, we know how everything, the background behind that person and the foreground is supposed to interact with each other. And I think that when you see a green screen, it looks like they're taken out of that world. It doesn't look like they're actually morphed into that world. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah, Joey, what do you think? Green screen a problem, or do you
know? Might be the print that you guys saw. I mean, the print that I saw, actually, I watched it out here in California. I didn't really, it didn't really distract me too much, actually. I didn't really notice a lot.
Well, let me give you a scene, Joe. You remember when they're on when that boat's taken off, and there's a chain coming after them that's like has a block attached to it or something, and it flies over their head and barely misses them.
Yeah,
that's what I mean by that didn't look real at all. Like I would rather them make a foam thing with a fake chain and actually pull that over the actors than do this CGI chain. That's just such an obvious green screen.
Yeah, it didn't jump out to me as much as like the Gophers and Indiana Jones.
yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? But it I wasn't really paying attention to, I guess, looking for that, or it didn't really distract me.
I love
how
you could compare everything to Indiana Jones 4 now. Like, it's like the writing wasn't as bad as Indiana Jones 4. And the acting wasn't as bad as Indiana Jones 4. The acting wasn't as bad as Indiana Jones 4.
You know, I almost feel like with CGI and green screen, it bugs me more, I think, when I see it in situations where you don't need it at all, but they had to get, like, a pickup shot or something. There's a shot in Sherlock Holmes where they're inside of a carriage and they're talking back and forth, and the background isn't even moving right, and you can totally tell it's on a stage with green screens, and it
but... Those are minor complaints. I mean, this movie. They're complaints nonetheless. But you know, it didn't ruin the movie. I don't think Rachel McAdams ruined the movie really. I think that this was a quality film, and I think it's a little bit of redemption on Guy Ritchie, who's made a couple of stinkers.
Oh man.
Yeah. Hold on, Rock and Roller was good though. I didn't see Rock and Roller. You like that one?
I like that movie.
I didn't see Rock and Roller either, but
yeah,
I thought the direction was great, fantastic.
Yeah, and
even with the opening shot, like, you could tell, I don't know, the opening shot was filmed backwards and played back backwards to look forwards.
Oh, did it?
Does that even make any sense whatsoever?
Well, I think I know what you're talking about, but no, I don't think it made sense. But
okay.
Just kidding, dude.
It was filmed in reverse, so when it played back, say, you know, remember the girl about to be sacrificed?
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
Spoiler alert, right? You could see her jerkiness and her movement. They filmed all of that in reverse. They filmed all the, you know, so they end with the carriage or the automobile going forwards in close-up, which you'd law in the back. That was filmed in back backwards.
Just to give it a weird look or what?
Yeah, to give it a weird look. And, you know, I just, the thing is with Guy Ritchie that I really love, and, you know, he's so visual that he plays with, you know, with the green screen stuff aside, he plays with ramping the camera a lot. He plays with, I guess, the film speeds and filming everything in reverse. He pays really close attention to composition and how things are going to come out. So, you know, I really appreciated that from him. And I love the steampunk type of feel throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, me too. Steampunk is getting big, and I think there's a reason for that. I think it has a fun thing too. That machine. That's the whole MacGuffin of the movie. It's really cool looking, really, really.
And I credit Dominic actually for introducing me to steampunk a little while ago. But
the steampunk is if you don't know what steampunk is, it's a cool like style of art direction that things are going in. If you played the game BioShock. Or if you just Google steampunk, you'll see objects that people... It's like modern objects redone to
Victorian
look...
Victorian style.
Yeah, Victorian style.
Well,
lots of knobs, lots of gears.
Yeah.
And so people do stuff like they turn their laptops into a steampunk laptop, or they just make a modern laptop look like an old typewriter or something. You know? And it's,
right.
I mean, basically the concept is it's like these old industrial revolution kind of look to everything, but with modern or futuristic capabilities to them.
Yeah, exactly. So in this movie, I was talking about this machine that has. Anyway, it's a cool style that I am not sick of yet.
You could almost argue that the train in, you know, the Back to the Future 3 is kind of a steampunk train.
I think that's an excellent example. Yes. So yeah, go see Sherlock Holmes. I recommend it. I recommend paying money and seeing it in the theater.
I would actually pay for it again to see it in the theater.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's worth spending your money on this holiday season. Any other movies you guys see? Jay and I went and saw The Road, which I loved. I thought that movie was just, as a film, that movie is just great. Any quick thoughts on that, Jay?
I liked it, too. It followed very closely to the book, which I read.
Did you see that movie, Joey?
No, I haven't.
Yeah,
I
well, you should check it out. It's really cool. It's almost a horror movie, I think. It's The tension is just so huge in that movie, and has like
it has tension, but I wouldn't go. I wouldn't call it a horror movie per se.
Well, I'd say almost a horror movie. I mean, in some parts, but I definitely recommend that. Viggo is
it's gruesome at parts, but
yeah, and Viggo is awesome. We've been rewatching Lord of the Rings because we're nerds, and I just can't get over how cool that guy Viggo.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I also watched Surrogates. Have you guys seen that?
Didn't
no.
see that.
Nothing to write home there. I watched The Invention of Lying. You guys seen that?
Mm-mm.
Yep, those are available in the torrent world. That's where I saw them. I recommend not paying for those. I want you to find another podcast that tells you that. Anyway, guys, I think we're going to wrap things up. Any other thoughts?
That's about it, I think, for this week.
Joey, did you have fun?
Yeah, I had a great time. Shoot with the Red, join the Jorpost Film Festival, and watch Sherlock Holmes.
What's going on in your world? Are you making any movies coming up? You're working on a TV series as your job.
Well, he just shot a music video. The one of our guest hosts from last week, Hannah McKenna, was...
She was the co-director. You were the co-director she kept referring to. Yes, yeah, so we talked about that last week, but...
We co-directed the music video, and it should be, online soon, so maybe look for a link later on ultimatumpictures.com.
Excellent. Well, when are you going to put that up, you think?
As soon as we get paid for it.
Oh, I love being indie. Working for free. That is awesome.
I'm kidding.
I got a job offer to work on another TV show. You know, that's exciting, except I'm a little bit worried about this podcast. I'll just have to do it on my free time and lose my mind. But we'll see how the new year goes. But we'll see you guys next week. We'll give you our top 10 movie lists or top 9 movie lists if you'd like to do it. So thanks very much for listening. Please visit indiemoviecast.com. We welcome comments, questions, and suggestions, so log on and contribute. Remember, we don't only talk the talk. To see the movies we've made, log on to ultimatumpictures.com. And also, if you're on Facebook, look us up and be our fan. Indie Movie Cast was put into the public domain in 2009 by Ultimatum Pictures. So long.
Bye.
See you next year.
Bye. Thank you.